Today we're going to consider this theme: the kingdom of God on earth in three stages. First, creation. Second, redemption. And the third, sanctification. Those are the different levels that Jesus described in his messages and revelations to Louisa. We know something about the first two, but there's a number of things that we need to know that he has revealed. First of all, in the Our Father, millions of people have been saying for 1900 years, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." By the way, I suggest you pray it that way. Emphasize, "Thy will be done on earth," pause, "as it is in heaven." If it were here already, there would be no reason for saying these words. Therefore, it's not here yet entirely. But if God had his way in the beginning, there would be no need to pray these words. We would have had heaven on earth right from the beginning of creation. So God had another plan to remedy the fault of Adam and Eve. This plan was to be realized in three stages: creation, redemption, sanctification. Today, we're going to explain these three words. First of all, the original plan. God created everything because he loved man. It was to be his to enjoy with all its fruits. In volume 18, page 1, I'm going to give my references for anybody that might want to check their sources. Jesus said, "So much was our love that if it had been necessary, we would have created as many heavens, as many suns, as many stars, as many seas, earths, plants, and all the rest, for how many creatures would have come into this world, so that each one would have had a creation all for himself, a universe all his own." Can you imagine the dimensions of that? That's like all you disappear and I'm the only one here and I'm enjoying all of creation. In volume 20, page 15, he said, "All the divinity was intent upon loving man and pouring itself into him. From the first instant of his life, man felt all the force of our love, and from the depths of his heart, with his voice, he showed his love for his Creator. How happy we felt, seeing that our work spoke to us, loved us, and with perfect love. Before that, all creatures could not speak. They simply honored God in the way God made them. They performed with the instinct that he put in them. And that way they glorified it, but they couldn't express it. But man could. It was a reflection of our love that went out of him, which had not yet been contaminated by his will. His love was perfect because he possessed the fullness of our love. To hear man say that he loved us made our joy and our satisfaction so great that to crown our feast, we made him king of all the universe and the most precious jewel of our creative hands. How beautiful man was when he was first created. It was our reflection that gave him so much beauty that enraptured our love, made him perfect in all his acts. The glory that he gave to his Creator was perfect, so that his adoration, so was his adoration, his love, and his works." Now, this is what the Lord is saying, "I want to restore." Now, Adam and Eve before the fall, volume 18, page 32. Jesus said, "Adam, being the first man, was made head of all the generations, and by necessity, being the head, he had to possess the seeds necessary for the development of human life in order to be able to give it to others." Now that's the quotation. This is what I'm saying. This would have developed with time as each generation came to life. All of this knowledge that would have accumulated over time was given to Adam at once. Jesus said Adam had all of these sciences, this knowledge in himself. And it can be said that they all came through him. Thus it can be said that in being created by God, he was gifted with all the sciences. What the others learned with so much labor, he possessed as a gift in a surprising manner. He possessed the knowledge of all the things of this earth, the science of all the plants, of all the herbs, of the powers each contained. He had the science in all the species of animals and how he should have made use of them. He had the science of music, of song, of writing, of medicine. In sum, he had the science of everything. Adam possessed them all. Now that was a gift given outright. Like, here there's something you wanted to do, and now you're going to study, and it takes you 6 months to learn. Now suppose you're praising the Lord, and in 1 hour, you've got it all. Now you have an idea what God gave to Adam and what we might have had. In volume 18, page 54, Jesus said, "Adam was my son. He had my will for the center of his life and for all his acts. And he possessed a strength, a dominion, an attraction that was all divine. Therefore his breath, his heartbeat, his actions gave off what is divine. All his being emanated a celestial perfume that drew us entirely to him. We felt ourselves wounded from all parts of this son. If he breathed, spoke, worked, and even the most innocent, indifferent, and natural things were wounds of love for us. Amusing ourselves with him, we filled him always to the brim with more of our goods, gifts. Because all that he did went forth from a single point, which was our will. Therefore, everything pleased us, and we did not find anything in him that displeased us." Now he goes on to continue to explain, volume 19, pages 5 to 6. "Our love for man was so much that it surpasses all the love that we had in creation itself. We gifted him with reason, memory, will, placing our will as in a bank in his will, so that he might multiply it, increase it 100-fold, so that he would always grow in glory, in richness, in love, in likeness to his Creator. That he could find all possible and imaginable help, we placed at his disposition our will, so that he might achieve with our own power the good, the growth, the likeness that he wanted to acquire with his Creator. Our love wanted to take a gamble, putting our things in the little circle of the human will, as in a bank. For example, our beauty, wisdom, sanctity, love, and so forth. Our will made itself guide and actor of his operations, so that not only would it make him grow to our likeness, but would give him the form of a little god." Now, of course, he doesn't mean divine nature. Be sure and get that straight. A little god. These are terms that have to be considered very carefully. Otherwise, we'd be talking about pantheism. Now, what was life like in the state of innocence? Volume 19, page 12. "In the state of innocence, Jesus said, to whomever lives in my will, it centers the goods of everyone in her, because in my will, there is no good that it does not bear, and it binds the soul to everyone and all that pertains to it. The goods, the light, strength, science, love, beauty would be in common. There would not be either yours or mine, but it would be in common. It would be in the natural order or the spiritual, whether in the natural order or the spiritual order, namely what we're in our human nature, or in the supernatural part of us, God's life and all the gifts that go with it, that would be shared by everyone equally. Each could take whenever and whatever he wanted. Man had the fullness of the goods of creation, the fullness of light, of strength and beauty, and all that God had created. By the way, there would be no prayer because man would not have to ask. It was all there. Except thanks and glory and adoration and praise. Volume 20, page 40, 41, Jesus said, from the instant he was created until the moment he sinned, Adam enjoyed the treasures and goods of God. What was ours was his. The fullness of the light that the divine will had centralized in him made him share in all our goods. How he enjoyed seeing our same, we enjoyed seeing our same happiness in him, our Son. Our will being one with his made our favors and joys rain down upon him in great streams. Unable to contain them all, he immediately made them rise up to him from whom he had received them in a witness of gratitude and tenderness. We gave him happiness, love, holiness, and glory, and he gave us happiness, love, holiness, and glory back to us. In other words, he just didn't receive. As he received, he felt the need to return it. Like when we're blessed, we say, praise you, Lord. See, we're returning glorification of God's gift. The same volume, 20, page 62 to 3, Jesus said, our love created the whole machine of the universe with infinite magnificence, order, harmony, for love of him for whom we created all things. What we would need to do is take a trip out in space. But we can do that with the astronauts. They show us what's happening, right? Now, there's a blessing of television. It shows you what God has made, and you can't but say, Lord, praise you for what you've done. And he said, I made it all for you. Maybe that you begin to think, are we the only planet in this galaxy with life from what Jesus says here? We don't know. When he created man without any merit of his own, for dowry, the foundation and substance of all the goods, joys, and happiness, we gave him the kingdom of our will, the gift, so that with the divine will at his disposal and our supreme being together with it, he would not lack anything. Our love wanted to display its grandeur and to give as much as it could until it filled our beloved jewel with all the possible and imaginable goods and form seas of love, holiness, happiness around him. That's the next thing to heaven. In volume 14, page 75, when I created man, I needed to establish so many currents of love between man and me of such magnitude that there would be no part of man through which these currents did not flow. In the intelligence of man flow the current of love for my wisdom. In his eyes flow the current of love for my light. In his mouth flow the current of love for my word. In his hands flow the current of love for the holiness of my works. In his will flow the current of love for my... And so it was with all else. Man was created to be in constant communication with his Creator. How could this have taken place without my currents of love flowing with his? Well, that's before the fall. Now, are you ready after the fall? Get your parachute. Volume 18, page 54 and 55, Jesus said, after sin, Adam descended from the state of being a son, was reduced to the state of being a servant. And as he had ruptured his union with his supreme will, the divine strength, the dominion, the attractiveness, the heavenly perfume left him. So his actions, his being, no longer gave off what was divine. He was filled with a human sensation, which caused him to lose his attractiveness to us. And we no longer felt ourselves wounded by love. Rather, we placed ourselves at a distance from him. After sin, poor thing, he lost the direct communication with his Creator. Remember, Jesus said, I walked in the garden with Adam, and we talked together. Pure love no longer reigned in him. Love was divided with fear, with timidness, and he no longer had the absolute dominion of the supreme will. After the sin, the same actions that he had done before now no longer had the same value. But more than that, all creation also understood that man had gone out from the eternal Creator as if from the fountain of life, in which he should conserve himself only with the life of the divine will. As all things were created, so they are now. Nothing has lost anything of its origin. Only man has lost the divine life, the base of operations. Therefore, he lost the nobility, the strength, the likeness of his Creator. Now, God did not completely leave man. His divine will, I'm quoting here, offered itself as a medicine so that he would not lose everything. So my will, he said, Jesus said, is medicine, holiness, preservation, food, life, and fullness of the highest holiness according to what creatures want of it. It offers itself as medicine if the creature wants it. It offers itself to take away the fever, the passions, the weakness, the impatience, the dizziness of pride, the malaise, that means a kind of, what's the word for that? As a kind of a laziness, a malaise of attachments. And so with all the rest of the evils, if the creature wants it as health, my will offers itself to preserve him healthy, to free him from whatever spiritual evil ails him. If he wants it as food, it gives itself as food so he develops strength, grows more in holiness. If he wants my will as life and fullness of holiness, then my will makes merry because it sees man returning to the bosom of his origin from where he came forth. And it offers him, rather, it offers itself to give him the likeness of his Creator, the unique purpose of creation. My will never leaves man. Keep in mind what he means by that. His power to keep us in existence, that's what it means. See, he kept him alive, otherwise we would just dissolve, would just vanish. See, the power of what we call omnipotence keeps man alive. If it did leave him, he would dissolve into nothingness. If he does not lend himself to becoming holy by my will, at least it uses ways to save him. So in spite of that loss, God preserved man, kept leading him on, and through the centuries, we had prophets and whatever in the Old Testament, remember? And then the second part of the plan, we're going to talk about that shortly, would come into effect. In volume 18, page 62, Adam withdrew from the divine will, placing himself at a distance from his Creator, which weakened him, impoverished him, deranged him completely, and carried that disorder to all the generations. When evil is in the root, the whole tree is forced to feel the evil effects and the bad humors that are contained in the root. Take the tree. Whatever is good in the tree comes from the root, that takes from the ground, whatever. And whatever comes eventually as the fruit of that tree is due to that root that keeps it alive. At volume 19, page 6, when Adam sinned, he immediately lost the gift of the divine will, which he enjoyed up to this time. With that loss came the loss of God's power, the goods of his gifts, the ability to grow in holiness, and that likeness to God which would have increased. In other words, even as he was made in this beautiful state, he could have kept on growing, see, in holiness. There was also the loss of the natural and supernatural beauty, wisdom, holiness, and love that were his before sinning. Jesus said, great was our sorrow in seeing these grand gifts rejected by the creature, and our gamble for Adam and Eve failed. But for however much it failed, it was always a divine gamble that could and should be brought back from its failure. See, God had all kinds of alternatives. He foresaw that Adam would fail, and he had an answer to that. Here, Jesus points to the promise that one day his original plan would be restored and his kingdom of the divine will reigning on earth as in heaven would be established. Now, he further explains the law sustained by Adam and Eve. He said, as Adam subtracted himself from my will, the goods and the light, strength, love, beauty became divided and partitioned among creatures. Therefore, there was no longer order, nor harmony, nor true love, either towards God or among themselves, as we saw what happened Cain and Abel, first signs of that division. Man, by separating himself from my will, lost the fullness of the goods of light, of strength and beauty, and all the other gifts, and was forced to live with difficulties. Well, the Lord spelt it out. In other words, you would work by the sweat of your brow. You would bear children in pain. You'll be subject to illness and death. Because of the disorder and lack of harmony in man's nature, and with himself, with God, and even with others, there could not be true happiness, nor true love of the kind that God intended, namely to love God above all things and in all things. And we have that today. It's unfortunate that we have people who are highly gifted in the sciences and everything, but the science of God they don't know. They have all kinds of degrees, but they don't know the first answer why they're on this earth, namely to love God, serve Him, be happy with Him now and forever in the next. Because of his passions, emotions, appetites that did not have the discipline and order needed, he could never be perfectly happy. Always there would be that conflict and battle between the flesh and the spirit. Originally, the body would have been perfectly subject to our spirit, and our spirit would have been perfectly subject to the divine will, to God. Well, that's what happens in the saints, to a certain point. See, their struggle and our struggle on earth is now we are battling our appetites, our passions and emotions and whatever, trying to keep them in control. In our human relationships, we experience all this, and we fail many times. That is our struggle. There would not have been any of that, and there will not be anything when the new Pentecost takes place. Can you wait? This conflict between body and spirit was not even removed at baptism. We experience this battle in our nature every day, and this is the arena of our struggles for holiness on our journey to heaven. So much for the first stage of creation. Now, how about what you learned there? How much the Lord gave us, and how much we lost. Oh, Adam. It's been said that he lived 600 years to repent. Now, redemption. When God's original plan failed because of Adam's sin, God delayed the realization of it. He intended to restore the gift of his divine will in man, but only after a long lapse of many centuries. So after the fall, there would be a period of many centuries during which man would suffer, pray, long for the promise of a Messiah who would fulfill the second stage of God's plan, namely redemption of man from a state of sin to a state of grace, and restoring God's life to the human spirit. At volume 19, page 11, because the divine will did not reign in man's human nature, Jesus, Son of God, took on himself our human nature, became man. Remember, man offended God, although the offense was infinite, so a man, just only a man, could not redeem. It had to be one that had both natures, divine and human. So Jesus came. See how wise God is. So in doing so, God intended the divine will should once more reign in human nature, in his human nature, namely all of human nature, and in his individual human nature, Jesus. Jesus said, my very redemption begged the divine will to make itself the life of my every action, of my heartbeat, of my suffering, and even of my breath, so that I would make flow in creatures the vital helps to save them. My redemption can be called tree, the root of which is the divine will. since it produced the trunk, branches, leaves, blossoms of all the goods that are there in the church, so it must produce the fruit of life which the root of this tree contains. Now he explains a word that I'm going to use, and you'll hear it a number of times. He said, all that I did in redemption was for the primary purpose that was my fiat. That's a Latin term, is let it be done. Remember the Our Father in Latin, fiat voluntas tua, thy will be done. So the purpose of my fiat, meaning the reign of my divine will, that it might reign on earth. But even when Jesus came and lived among us and taught his divine truth, suffered and died, mankind would still not be ready for the gift of the divine will. Jesus provided the holy means of growing in holiness and doing God's will, but not yet living in the divine will. Keep those two terms separate. Doing the divine will, living the divine will are not the same thing. We'll explain that. So we had the sacraments. We had sanctifying grace, the virtues of faith, hope, and love, prudence, justice, fortitude, temperance, seven gifts of the Holy Spirit, and also the charismatic gifts, the divine indwelling of God within us, all this as means to grow spiritually in doing God's will. But mankind was not yet ready for the gift of living in the divine will. Now here's what Jesus says. He used the comparison of a teacher who possessed the science of his lesson in the highest degree, like mathematics, but was speaking to students who were all illiterate, like the sweat hogs on TV, if you remember who they were for some time. John Travolta was one of them. All right? Yeah, so I understand you. Okay. And gradually prepare them for higher knowledge. He had also to form many teachers who would continue presenting more lessons until they were ready for the highest form of teaching, namely the gift of the divine will. If, instead, he would rather give lessons on this high science, namely the divine will, the pupils, being illiterate, would not have understood. And then, being confused by so much science due to their ignorance, they would have left. That's like the teacher, instead of teaching the mathematics of 2 and 2 are 4, he started with calculus. And they'd say, they wouldn't come back the next day. Well, think of what happened when Jesus was teaching about his Eucharist. Unless you eat my body, drink my blood, you can't have life in you. And they said, this is cannibalism. So long, Lord. See? Now Jesus explained, if I had wanted to speak about the fiat, the kingdom of my divine will on earth, and about living in it, they would have been incapable of understanding it. If living in it, if they did not know the way to come to me, it was because they were, for the greater part, lame, blind, sick. I had to lower myself in my humanity, which covered that fiat that I wanted to give in order to associate myself with everyone and thus be able to teach the first rudiments, the ABCs, of this supreme kingdom of my divine will. And all that I taught, did, and suffered was only to prepare the way, the kingdom of the dominion of the divine will. He said, in the redemption, everything was done for the purpose that the kingdom of my divine will, called my fiat, would be able to reign once again in the creature, as when we issued him forth from our creative hands, meaning Adam and Eve in innocence. We do not have to hurry in our works, because we have not only the centuries, but all the eternity at our disposition. We go at a slow pace, like 1,000 years. But then we have our triumph. First we prepare, then we act. So for what's going to happen 3 years from now, we hope, took 2,000 years to prepare. I'm quoting again from the same source, page 69. Perfect glory and complete honor was given to my will by my humanity. In other words, we had man in perfection on earth, now giving God all he deserved. That was Jesus. It was really in my interior, in the center of my heart, which formed the kingdom of my supreme will. And since man had lost it, there was no hope of being able to reacquire it. My humanity reacquired it with the intimate, unheard-of pains, giving it all the honor it owed and the glory taken away by creatures, in order to give it again back to the creature, because he redeemed us, and once more God could restore it. So the kingdom of my will was formed in my humanity, my every thought, glance, breath, heartbeat, every drop of my blood, everything, all carried the seed of the Thy Kingdom Come of the Supreme Kingdom of God. Volume 20, page 32-3, Jesus, the Kingdom of God began with Jesus' conception. And he said here, from the instant in which my humanity was conceived, I began to create the new kingdom of my will upon earth, extending its dominion over every action that my humanity conceived. All my actions, both interior and exterior, animated by this, namely the divine will, underwent a new creation and were converted into as many acts of the divine will. Now, Jesus pointed out that the human will in Adam banished the kingdom of the divine will from man. And to restore it once more, he said, my humanity first had to win back the kingdom of the divine will by calling it back into myself, giving it full powers over its human nature. My divine will triumphantly, taking possession of all my actions, invested, in other words, took over, my tears, sighs, heartbeats, my steps, works, words, pains, with his creative power, adorning them with his unending light, and so formed the creation of its kingdom. Before the kingdom of the divine will could be restored to man, Jesus said, my will wanted all the acts and pains of my most holy humanity as the guarantee, the foundation, the basis for this restoration. What's going to come is all due to what Jesus did. Okay? We're going to cash in on it. So, do you see how much this kingdom cost me? With how much love the divine will developed it in me? And I'm adding this. So the kingdom of the divine will does exist. All that is necessary is that it be made known. And this is Jesus again now. So that it manifests all the good things that it contains. And Jesus is saying, what we have to do now is know it. If you know enough about it, you'll see how highly attractive it is and that you want it. And if you want it, it'll be given to you. But then you must live it. And that's the big problem here. See, in the meantime, we're going to be struggling, dealing with our attachments and the areas of our life that is not quite in God's will. And that's part of the problem. But then we have a grace now that was not even given to the saints. Jesus is saying, you're living in me. See? By this consecration. We'll say more about, in other words, the gift of the divine will. Now, the same volume 20, page 33, Jesus urges us to respond to his request. What I ardently desire is that the soul accept my will completely, be free to form the kingdom of my will in it, just as my humanity did, that it never oppose my will in anything. Finding no obstacles, my acts will flow in the soul's actions and take their place of honor. They will continue to create the life of the kingdom of my will in itself. Now that means more and more each day, as you and I say, from one task to another, Jesus in your will. That means you're really doing his will, because it's his will that you do housework. See, we're doing his will, but our motive for doing it is different. I'm going to go into that perhaps a little later on. But we're going to move into now the third stage of what we call sanctification. The period of time known as the era of sanctification is the third and the last time of God's creative action to bring about the final fulfillment of his original plan to have the divine will reign in all creation, including man. The Lord waited for thousands of years to bring about the final fulfillment of this plan. In volume 20, page 5, Jesus said, here he describes the gift that he wants to give mankind. He said, doesn't it seem to you that the greatest gift that in my immense goodness that I can give to mankind is truly that of giving the kingdom of my will back to them, even though it was rejected with such ingratitude? But to give it, first it's necessary to form it, to establish it, make it known, make everything known about my will that has been unknown until now. This knowledge will conquer man, who will feel driven by the need to love, appreciate, desire such a great gift. Now here Jesus points out how necessary it is to know as much as possible about the kingdom of the divine will, the gift of the divine will, living in the divine will. And that's what all these conferences are about. He explains in greater detail in the following words. Whoever possesses my will acquires the right to all its riches, to the likeness with his own creator, to the divine holiness, to God's goodness, to his love. In a word, the right to make heaven and earth, everything, his own. So the greatest gift, the greatest grace that can come upon a creature is that of giving it my will so that it can live in it. Now, we don't have all that. See, that would come, as the Lord describes it, in the new Pentecost. If heaven and earth will be the same, thy will be done on earth as in heaven, all this will be there then. Now, when will this take place? When the divine will reigns in the soul, there is a... And the page, if you want it, is page 1. Jesus said, in every 2,000-year period, I have renewed the world. In the first period, I renewed it with the flood. In the second 2,000 years, I renewed it with my coming to the earth and manifesting my humanity, from which, as so many channels of light, my divinity shone. And in this third period of 2,000 years, those who are good and the saints themselves have lived the fruits of my humanity, but have enjoyed my divinity scarcely at all. That's the difference between doing God's will and living in the divine will. See, the saints imitated Jesus' human life. Jesus is saying, now I want you to imitate me in my divine life as I walk this earth. And how can we do that? We can't do it without him. Remember, go back to the Gospels. Without me, you can do nothing. Did you ever know it contained all this? See how deep the words of the Gospel are? Jesus said them with all the knowledge he had. We, with our puny little knowledge, we see that. We think of our own little detailed life. But he meant all this, and he's only revealing it now. So don't you see, the Gospels do contain all that we're saying, but it's so deep that we couldn't draw it out unless we had more private revelation. Don't you see the need for private revelation? So now we are at the end of the third period. This is Jesus saying it. And there will be a third renovation. And this is why there is general confusion. It is due to the preparation for the third renovation. In this period, after the purification of the earth and the destruction of a large part of the present generation, I will be still more generous with creatures. I will complete the renovation by manifesting what my divinity did in my humanity, how my divine will worked with my human will, how everything remained joined in me, how I did and redid everything, and even the thoughts of each creature, and redone by me and sealed with my divine will. My love wishes to release itself and make known the excesses that my divinity worked in my humanity for creatures. These excesses greatly surpass those which my humanity visibly worked. In other words, we only saw half of what he did. We saw only the externals, what he did in his body. What was he thinking all the time that he went through each phase of his passion as he preached, whatever? We don't have that. Very, very little of it. These excesses greatly surpass what my humanity visibly worked. This is why I often speak about living in my divine will, which I have not manifested to anyone until now. So to Luisa, Jesus said that he waited all these years from the time of the incarnation until now to bring about the restoration of the kingdom of the divine will. He said, now the time has come for the creature to enter into this plane and be the first to live in the divine will. And to her, he has shown us how to live in his will, not even the saints before this time. That's what he pointed out. He said, search through the lives of all my saints, as many as you wish, or in all the books of doctrine, and you will not find the prodigies of my will operating in the creature and the creature operating in my will. This means the time had not arrived in which my goodness should call the creature to live in this sublime state. They weren't ready, not even 50 years ago. See, although 50 years ago he gave it to Luisa. I shouldn't say they weren't ready. She was. See, even at the age of 17, she had reached the highest union with God. So that was way back in 18, possibly 99 or something. I'm just guessing. Even the very manner I have you pray, saying to Luisa and to us in praying in the divine will, even the very manner I have you pray is not found in any other creature, like they're said in this book here. I think perhaps we should have a little break here. And have you got your spacesuits on yet? any questions?
I have one, Father, which is a question that's come up over and over again. In that statement you made on the first page I think you were reading, the little God, and you said, be careful how you hear that. And most people who hear it, hear it as, you are God. Mm-hmm. Would you explain that? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Well, St. Peter in his epistle says we share in the divine nature.
Yes, see? I understand.
Well, that's what it means. Now, what does that sharing mean? See, that's a mysterious word. Mm-hmm. In baptism, we share God's life. We call it sanctifying grace. We don't have all the words to describe it. But it's, in a sense, it's living on God's level without being God as such.
That's right.
See? Okay. We have the gifts and able to enjoy that life. But what that life is in itself is hard to describe. But it's that life that grows and becomes the St. John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila, the little flower. See? When it reaches its fullness. Each one of us is an ideal that the Holy Spirit has destined to be an image of Jesus. And when that's realized, then we'll be St. Lucy and then St. Mary and St. Josephine. Joanne.
What you were saying is the last page was living in the divine will.
Yes.
Which is what would explain that statement that speakers make lots of times. You are God, but you are in the divine nature of God.
You share. See, share.
The divine nature of God.
See, we had a beginning. We're not like God, have no beginning at all.
No.
See?
Only
God has no beginning. We are eternal once created.
Yes.
See, that's the difference between the divine and the not divine.
I noticed that in all this description at the beginning there, the Lord never mentions Eve. It's always Adam, Adam, Adam. When Adam sinned when Adam sinned. Now, apparently, he was there, otherwise he wouldn't have sinned. Just speculating, suppose she did bite the apple, she sinned. But if Adam didn't sin, would not have taken it?
It all depended on Adam. Yes. Yeah. Apparently, it was Adam's decision.
Huh?
See, Adam was the head of creation.
So
what he did is what counted or would be blamed for. For or against.
She sinned. We might have gotten what lighter? Is that the idea?
Well, it's I would say it's uselessly discussed.
It's speculative.